Hello, and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions. As always, I am your host, Robert Jean Pellecchio, coming at you with back to just one playwright this month. We're talking with Liz Wiest, who recently submitted her play Thou Shalt Covet, an irreverent comedy about reverent people. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me today.
Thanks so much for having me today, Robert. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, this is the first time in a bit I have had someone physically here to interview. Normally I do them over the phone, but this is also the first time in a bit I've had somebody who has not met Albus before come hang out. So thank you for, he seemed to like you.
I know, I got good vibes, but you know, you never know with cats, they're sneaky, so.
Oh, he's horrible. But as previous listeners will know, he bites and scratches all the time. But he's always on his best behavior during readings, usually. Well, welcome again. As I always start off, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to just pick your brain about your theater history and what your whole theater deal is.
Thanks, yeah, absolutely. You just want me to...
Yeah.
All right, yeah, where do I even start? I mean, I've done theater my entire life. I, you know, started like most little girls start, trying to audition for Annie. And, you know.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. You know, tale as old as time. What can I say? So there was always that. And I was always really driven by acting. I mean, I was a movie buff growing up.
Same. I still am.
Still, I mean, I said growing up as if that changed even in the slightest. I just eat up plays. I eat up theater. I was going to all I would ever ask for holidays, for birthdays, going to see Broadway shows, that sort of thing. Went to college at Temple and majored in English, double minored in economics and theater.
Million dollar
question is what are you going to do with that? And I guess I'm still
it is
thinking.
It's an interesting pairing.
It's eclectic. I changed my major like 5 times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Actually, I looked at Temple as well. I visited Temple, and one of the first things I said on my visit is that the number one entry major for a college student is undeclared.
So, I was psychology, which is probably the second most. I don't know, because I feel like everybody goes to the phase where they want to do psychology.
Well, I was influenced a lot by my... kind of grounded in reality most of the time. Mother, who wanted me to pursue my love of theater, but also wanted me to make money. So I was I loved editing. I loved all that. So I was a double major of theater and mass comm. Not even minor, just went double major. Did not last because my love of theater just outweighed. And my mother tried everything she could to keep me on the straight and narrow, and I was like, I can't. I felt really bad because that year, when Christmas rolled around, she had ordered me a mug that had the Bloomsburg University Carver Hall on it and said Mass Communications, because they didn't have a theater one. And I was like, is this why you fought so hard for me to stay in the major? Because you'd already bought the
mug.
She did not. She wanted me to just make money and be successful. But I'm happy with what I'm doing, and she's very happy now that I'm doing it. I had to save that at the end because I know she's listening to this.
It's okay. I hope the mug went to good use.
It did. It had many a tea in it.
Oh, good. That's all you can ask for in the life of a mug. So...
Now, as my Starbucks family would say, you could also ask for coffee, but I'm definitely more of a tea guy.
Wish I could relate. Wish I could relate.
Sorry, I cut you off. So anyway, theater, Temple.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are kindred spirits in the sense that, you know, coming from families that want you to stay on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
I'm also a big reader. It seems, I mean, you and I have already made like 3 connections and mutual things that we've read.
Yes.
So, huge reader. So I'm like, okay, well, I need to stay with, you know, the writing. I need to keep that in fine tune, but I want to make money. So I tried double majoring in econ, LOL. didn't last long. So then I went to theater finally. I've actually been working at the Wilma Theater, for 4 years now. I moved to Philly and I hadn't started out in theater, so I'm like, okay, like, what am I going to do? I need to sort of navigate my way. So I literally, like, rolled up to the Wilma, with a resume that was like, I worked in a pizza shop in high school. And the guy I got talking about musicals and shows and that kind of thing, he's like, you know what? I like you. Yeah. Be my intern all the time.
Honestly, that's really the best you can ask for out of a theater job is just, are you the right person? Doesn't matter. I bring up Hedgerow Theater a lot on this podcast, where I currently work. And I remember after my first show there, one of their longtime actors said, I was very thrilled to be in this world of professional theater. And I thanked him for, I loved working with him. And I said, I hope we get the chance to work together again sometime. And he said, I know we will because you're good people. And he clarified and he said, there have been people who they could be the best actor in the world and you'll never work with them again because they're not good to work with. And I think that's kind of rang true for every show I've done since, not just with them, but just in general.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It's, you just get the most wild people in theater. Like, it truly, I mean, to quote the great Tom Hanks, as Forrest Gump, theater people are like a box of chocolates. You just never know what you're going to get.
I remember that part.
What's that?
I remember that part.
Oh, I think on average, I think if you take anything away from that, I think that's the takeaway of the movie. Yeah. But absolutely. So I've been at the Wilma for a while now, and I've kind of just been doing a bunch of things here and there, just trying to find my way, figure out what the heck I'm going to do. And this summer, I actually lived in London, and I worked for... it was really cool. I worked for an entertainment company in the West End that worked like predominantly with West End actors and all that kind of stuff. And it was honestly just a dream come true. And I just knew from that, I was like, there's nothing keeping me away anymore. Yeah. It's just like, it's settled.
I wish I had had more time in London. I took a 5-week study abroad section in London. And we got to see a fair amount of shows. Got like 9 shows were just part of the curriculum. And then my own, I went to see Love Never Dies, which I think had only opened like a month prior. Ramin was understudy that night. It was
stop.
Very
I was gonna ask.
But it was Tom Mutu, so he was to die for. And then I saw Wicked and Phantom, of course. And War Horse, which had just opened recently.
Did you see it at the National?
At the National, yes. Yeah. It was pre-Broadway, so it was visually one of the most beautiful things I saw. But no, I definitely it reaffirmed my love of theater.
I got a backstage tour of the National, and I saw the horse that you're talking about.
Oh, nice. The best part was when they had the little horse grow into the big one, where they split the puppet open and had the big horse jump out. That's not running anywhere, is it? Did they close that?
They did close it. They have the big horse just like hanging up with a bunch of props just backstage. Yeah. And I have a tad bit of a fear of horses. And so, I walk backstage and see this like mangled puppet horse thing just hanging from like suspended from the ceiling. And I was
what's crazy about that show is that to probably not do anything to assuage your fears. But after the first like 2 scenes of that show, you forget that it's a puppet. You really just are in the world of like, this is a horse.
It's such an effective world of the play. Really, really is.
Yeah.
It's something that's super impressive about that show. I actually didn't get the opportunity though. The National just recently did Follies with...
Oh, nice.
I know. Imelda Staunton was the lead.
Staunton is blowing up lately, by the way. Like Gypsy and...
Yeah.
Mrs. Lovett recently.
I was literally just about to say, her Mrs. Lovett was 10 out of 10.
Yeah. And so good. Sadly, she will unfortunately always be Umbridge.
Well, I actually got the opportunity to... So, the guy playing across her, Adrian Grove, he worked at the company I worked for in London. The one day he comes up to me, he's like, Liz, like, I have this problem. And I'm like, okay, what is me, the intern, going to be able to do to... Yeah. Avert this crisis. And he's like, I don't know how to do an American accent. And I'm like, okay. He's like, will you teach me? I'm like, I can try my best.
That's definitely got to be on a resume now.
It is.
You're
now
a dialect coach. It is.
Like, I am a self-taught dialect coach.
Okay. Can you hear the words that are coming out of my mouth? There you go.
And you just gotta, like, break it down. It was, oh my god, that was, like, so daunting. Like, well, he then told me, because they ended up, I guess, getting a real dialect coach, and he was like, it didn't even matter. Everything they said was what you said. And I was like, all right, well.
They could have saved themselves a lot of money.
I know.
So when did playwriting come into the picture?
Ooh, I've always had the interest in playwriting. I was the little kid, always putting on shows and that kind of thing. I don't have a theater-oriented family, so mostly putting them on for, you know, my stuffed animals and that kind of thing. And I was, of course, a very captive audience. I'd always had the interest in it, although I kind of never really had the push to write something full. So I took a playwriting class at Temple, and I was like, okay, like, this, it's super hard. Like, this is really hard. But I liked the challenge, and I liked the fact that I'm like, okay, no, like, this is always what I wanted to do, and I'm struggling so much with this. I'm gonna write a show. And that's kind of when Thou Shalt Covet was born. It started off as my, it was a one act for my final for that course. And I'm just like, I'm in love with these characters. I'm in love with these situations. And the one piece of advice I got was write about the characters until you're sick of them. Like, if you don't know your character's favorite color and their favorite song, you're not done with them yet. So I'm like, all right, I'm not done with these guys yet. So then I just over the course of the next year and a half, I just kept at it. Extended it, and I then decided, I'm like, you know what? Like, I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life, so let's make the bold and brash decision to apply for an MFA.
Which, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So are you back in school now?
I start in August.
Nice.
Officially.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to be getting an MFA
in
both playwriting and screenwriting at Point Park, so.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. That was a super recent development, actually, but I in no world thought it would actually happen. I'm just like, you know what? I'm
going to
wing
it.
I'm going to, you know, throw in this play that I wrote. I really don't have, like, I have other little things. I wrote for a blog in South Philly for a while. I saw, like, some pieces of writing here and there, but I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get in. And, like, it just ended up working out. But that's kind of what I did for Thou Shalt Covet. I was like, okay, I'm not even going to be considered for an MFA if I never had a show that's been done, because I'm going up against people who are, you know, far more experienced than me. So I was, you know, got a friend and I was like, hey, I need to do this show.
Right.
And I won't take no for an answer. And I got many no's. The Temple wouldn't sponsor it. I had just a bunch of locations say no. So it was just a process of no, no, no. But I was like, no, like, I need to at this point.
Yeah.
And people just telling me no makes me want to do it more.
Right.
Of course. So it ended up by some miracle all coming together. I had an amazing cast, a great director at Soundspace Philadelphia.
Was this the one act version or the one that you sent us?
I've made a little bit of it. It was very much a living, breathing script. So you know, as the script that we started off with in the rehearsal process was not the script that we ended with, because there were things that I realized, okay, like, this doesn't work as well as it did in my head. Let's change this around. And my actors were so good with that. They were so accommodating. They were, like, so all about, like, oh, okay, like, we can change this. That's fine. Like, they really just got so in tune with the characters that they were able to change things that felt more natural. So it was really nice. Those changes are then what I sent to you guys.
Nice. Well, before we dive further into the behind the scenes of it, can you please just set up what the piece is? Just kind of a basic premise of it, and then give a quick setup of the scene we'll be listening to from it.
Yeah, sure. So, Thou Shalt Covet is a two-act play. In my head, I'm like, would it ever be a musical? I don't know, but that's when my, you know, I have more energy to pursue these outrageous ambitions. But I was like, okay, like, let's keep it as a play for now. It centers around a group of four best friends who things kind of get shaken up when the main protagonist, Andrew, decides to kind of up and go to seminary and give up his full scholarship to college. And it takes place over the course of them, you know, dealing with this decision and then them meeting up 5 years later.
Right.
So there's a bunch of things that happen in between, but, I guess.
Awesome. And then what are we going to be hearing from it today?
I believe the scene that we're going to be doing or hearing is an excerpt from when Andrew is telling his best friend, Catherine, that he's made the decision to go to seminary. And she already knows because her boyfriend has told her, because everybody, he has made it known to everybody except for her because she's been the hardest to tell. He doesn't know that she was a victim of abuse by a priest just a few years prior. So she's sort of going into this with very much like, no, please don't. And he doesn't understand why she's not being supportive. So it's kind of a very, very much a conflict of interest. So,
yeah. Well, let's take a listen. Scene 6, Andrew's backyard. He is sitting at a picnic table under an umbrella engrossed in a gargantuan copy of The Catechism of the Catholic Church. There is a string of rosary beads hanging from the book as a place mark. There is a quaint TLC ambiance around the home. Catherine enters stage right, holding a pack of beer. She watches him for a while, unnoticed. She studies him sadly, fully knowing what is coming.
Quit it, bookworm. Mock trial's over. Take a break, will ya?
Where'd you score that?
You know, my folks are never home. They won't notice if a couple of their top-shelf local brewery bottles go missing or whatever.
Well, I'm always glad to share the wealth.
They twist off the beers and each take uncomfortably long sips.
You've been hanging around Peggy a lot lately. You better not be replacing me.
She told you we've been hanging out a lot?
No, I just kind of noticed. Weren't you guys just together?
Yeah, but we were just smoking a cigar.
I didn't accuse you of anything suspicious.
Yeah, I know. So, did you get my text?
Yeah, I did. So what's this big trouble you need to talk to me about? You got trouble in paradise with Tessa? Didn't end the semester with a 4.0? You decided to hate capitalism? No, let me guess, you're a chronic masturbator.
Can you cut it out?
Well, now I know you're serious. You normally find me funny.
I always find you funny. Now's just not the time.
Drew, is this, like, actually something serious?
I mean, I think so.
Don't torture yourself. Eric told me about seminary. Don't give him hell. I forced it out of him.
I figured as much. You're quite persuasive. Plus, you've got him so wrapped around your finger, I figured all you'd do is start batting your eyelashes and that'd be it.
Hey, fuck you, buddy.
And you, pal.
Doesn't even matter. Eric's pissed at me anyways. He says I'm being narrow-minded, but I say he doesn't know jack shit. So you're actually serious about this, huh?
Yeah.
Not to be that guy and make it about me, but why am I the last to know?
You were harder to tell than Tessa.
I mean, with all due respect, bud, when you say jump, Tessa says how high. You could tell her you were going to commit armed robbery and she'd be gung-ho because she's so into you. I'm the only one out of all these goons here who will actually give it to you straight.
I don't disagree. So here's your opportunity then.
What do you mean?
Give it to me straight.
Fine. You're a stupid, dumb, idiot, dumb boy.
You're bad at insults. Elaborate? Come on, mock trial goddess, use your words. Pretend I'm a witness you're cross-examining.
Dude, I'm not going to stand here and act like I know your future, or what do you call it, vocation. But as your best friend, quite frankly, I say good riddance to Tessa. She has the personality of a wet sock, and her makeup is never blended into her neck. I don't know why, but that always bothered me. Bitches aside, damn it, Drew. You have a future ahead of you that blows everyone in this podunk hellhole out of the water. What happened to Drew, the hotshot attorney? The kid who started reading the LSAT prep books when he was 10? I'm curious, are you going to waste your perfect score on the SATs to go become a recluse? You only applied to one college because it was close to seminary. Like, are you nuts? When did all this happen? I thought you and I went to church because our parents made us and because Barney's never carted when we tried to get beer afterwards.
I wish I could explain it to you. I really do. I wish I could explain my thought process even a little. All I know is that it was like one day a switch was flipped. You were next to me at Mass that day. I don't know, it was during the Eucharist. I just felt something incredible. And I just heard in my head this voice like calling me to worship something. I don't know.
True. No offense, but you sound weirder than the time we tried to get high off my mom's hairspray.
I know. It sounds crazy, but nothing in my life that I had planned feels right for me anymore. I need to do something bigger than myself.
But this? Drew, I'm trying to understand. I really am.
Kath, I can make such a difference doing this.
You can make a difference as a lawyer.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah, I know. This is worse.
How? How is this worse? Kath, I'm more happy to listen to you. But we can't get anywhere unless you start giving me something to work with.
You have to know the reputation of Catholicism for people outside our town, Andrew. I know you're not that dense.
You've known me since kindergarten. When have I ever cared about what people thought about me?
That's not what I mean.
Okay, then what?
I'm talking statistics.
Statistics of what? Kath, with all due respect, you suck at math.
Don't make me say it.
Oh, that's what you're talking about? You can't be serious.
Let me explain.
I know for one second that you wouldn't think that
I... No, not you. It's the institution. It's the people who cover up. It goes all the way to the top, Drew. You remember what happened 2 years ago? If it's this beautiful thing that you think it is, why does it happen? Why does it happen so often? It's something like 0.6% of priests.
0.6?
0.6 is too much.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Did you know there's an organization that helps victims and there's literally 12,000?
Were you Googling these on your way here or something?
I'm trying to make a point.
Same here, and you're not listening to me. I'm going to be different.
I know that, but...
You can't believe every statistic you read. It doesn't happen more in Catholicism than anywhere else. It's a fact. You don't think I've looked into that? I have a conscience too, for God's sake. Kath, I know it sounds crazy, but I really feel like I could help change it.
You can't.
I want to help those 12,000 just as much as you do.
Then don't be a priest. That's one way to help.
Honestly, what makes you think you have the right to tell me what is and isn't helping? You'll never be at seminary, so you couldn't possibly know the difference that those men make out there.
Yeah, I'd never be out there because I'm a woman.
Oh, give me a break, Catherine. I know you're not pulling that card.
Pulling that card? Who are you?
Closing statement. You and your third wave feminism are just too biased to see that you want to bring down something that has been good for thousands of years. I really would have thought my best friend would have supported me in this. You're all about choice, aren't you? Well, this is mine. The good outweighs the bad and always has. If you weren't so damn narrow-minded and stubborn, you might actually be able to understand what I'm trying to say to you.
What I'm hearing you say to me is that me and the other 12,000 don't matter.
Wait, what?
You heard me. I'm not talking about this anymore. You know now, so sleep on that. There's no changing your mind, just as there's no changing mine. I told my mom the good news. She's thrilled and wants to throw her surrogate son a going-away party next Friday. It's at our house at 5. Bring the family if you want. I'll see you there. Capiche?
Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Catherine turns to exit.
Hey, Kath. I'll pray for you.
Cool.
And we're back. So a lot of tension. A lot of,
Yeah.
energy in that. So yeah, let's just get back to the play as a whole. I fortunately had the pleasure of playing a character in this reading when we read it, and I just have to say, first off, my first favorite thing about this piece, and it's a very obscure thing that only I would pick up, and I think Lauren knew that when she cast me, is that the character's name is Eric, and he's described as, I forget what the exact line is, but they describe him, they compare him to Phantom of the Opera. Please tell me that that was intentional.
Oh, 100%. Okay. Well, sort of. Yeah, yes. Well, okay, so the thing is like, I very much had... I had a very specific vision of this character when I was writing him, and he was just very... it happened on accident, on purpose, kind of, because, like, I live and breathe Phantom. Phantom is something that's very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, I grew up on the Andrew Lloyd Webber Phantom. It shaped basically the way I am and my love of theater. And if I have one... you know, very minor peeve about it, it's that the Phantom, I know it adds to the mystery, but that they don't use his name in that production. and almost every other Phantom musical I know of uses the name Eric, except for that one.
But, yeah, honestly, that was always a pet peeve of mine, yeah. too.
You're the first person I've ever met who has had that same issue.
Oh, no, it definitely is bothersome because there's so much characterization in Gaston Leroux's novel that is kind of omitted from the musical, which is a total bummer.
For the record, I want to state that I have no problem with the fact that there are literally only 5 songs in that musical that get repeated over and over again. My only problem is that the name is not mentioned. I love Lloyd Webber, but once I realized that about him, I couldn't not hear it.
Oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, I understand. Who was it? I think he stole some of it from Pink Floyd or somebody.
Oh, there was a whole thing. There was, actually, sidebar, my favorite Andrew Lloyd Webber story is somebody sued him for, I think it was, I forget if it was Phantom or Joseph, one of his musicals, somebody sued him for stealing, sued him for stealing the music, and he won the countersuit because the song in question was stolen from Close Every Door. So basically, someone accused him of stealing a song of theirs that was stolen from a previous song of Andrew Lloyd Webber's. Which means, transitively, that other Andrew Lloyd Webber song was inspired by Close Every Door.
What a bizarre, wonderful man. I don't.
But anyway, back to the outro of it. I gotta get better at staying on track. Yes, Eric, Phantom. But Eric's a neat character, too. So they're all very unique characters that have various, I'm just trying to think the best way to describe it, various quirks, I guess you would say.
Yes.
And I should point out the other challenge that it kind of helped doing the reading in a house with Albus wandering around, but that there is a cat on stage in Act 2.
There is, and yes.
It's not just that there is a cat on stage, but the cat's actions are specific to the plot. How the hell do you do that?
I struggle with whether or not I want to keep that because I realize it is so goofy, but also everyone who saw it was just like, oh my gosh, the cat. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess he was just a scene stealer. But I came up with that because it's kind of based off of my own cat that is just, is like 14 years old and suffers from allergies and anxiety. I'm not convinced he's entirely cat. I'm convinced he might be part alien. Not positive on that. But I was just like...
You were talking about your cat, right?
My personal cat. Yes. Who was the inspiration for this fictional cat. But I was like, you know, how fun would it be to have this disgusting little horrible animal.
Creature. Yeah.
A horrible creature. Just help further this plot of these four best friends that just like their lives are falling apart. So
you said earlier your inspirations behind just playwriting in general. What was your specific inspiration for this piece?
Well, I was born and raised in a very conservative Catholic area. I was put through Catholic school, kindergarten through 12th grade. So I just have all this, you know.
I got out after 6th. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It shaped me as a human being, and it gave me just, it's weird. It's a very bizarre upbringing that you don't realize how bizarre it is until you're surrounded by people
who weren't,
and you're talking about things and they're looking at you like you have 3 heads. Like, they're just like, what are you talking about? That was not a thing. So very much of it was that, but when I went to college especially, you know, and I went to Temple, which was, could not be more different from the world I grew up in. And so I had a very weird time adjusting because I was interacting with all of these people that I never, you know, interacted with before. And I was blessed growing up to just be surrounded with these wonderful, amazing friends. And it's just been interesting to see just all of my friends from Catholic school, now that we're becoming adults, how our relationships with religion have come to fruition or not, yeah. In our lives. And I've always been really fascinated to kind of see how people deal with life when it absolutely sucks, mm-hmm. and people's different coping mechanisms, kind of especially when it comes to religion. I find it just really interesting to see how different people handle tragedy, right. and handle just shit that happens. Especially these characters, you know, growing up, some of them really cling to religion when they need it most, and the other ones are like, absolutely not. This did not serve me well at all. So I've just always been interested my entire life, based off of people I know, based off of just the conceptualization of religion in general, how people use it or don't use it to deal with, you know, life when it gets, when the going gets tough, and even just how they reconcile it and just in their everyday lives. And can people who love each other very much but are starkly different from one another, can they keep meaningful relationships in their lives when their views and
are so different?
Yeah.
Well, what I also thought was interesting is I wouldn't have guessed this, and I think it was a couple people touched on it in the feedback once we were finished the reading, but you said that this started out as a one act. What was the development process like getting it from a one act to a two act?
So act one was just these friends coming together 5 years later after.
Oh, so the whole the high school part of it wasn't in the original.
So basically, this what I had started off with took place in the future, quote unquote, and so I was like, people need backstories on these characters for it to fully make sense why their objectives are what they are and why these characters are doing what they're doing. Because everyone, you know, who had read it and given me feedback on it, they're like, I want to know more about these characters. And like, why are they making these decisions? And they make a lot more sense when you get to know the characters a little bit more. And you kind of get like, oh, well, you know, Eric's a gothy Phantom of the Opera type, and so that's why he's doing this. Or like, Catherine's just a nut job, so that's why she's doing that. Like, it just... It made their objectives, it made their motivations so much more clear, and it really made them lovable, too, because seeing their relationships with one another and developing them and fleshing those out more, it just made them, really brought them to life.
Wow. Nice. And I also, what I didn't realize prior to talking to you today was that this show has seen the light of day prior to coming to us. Normally... a lot of our ears readings are kind of first run, first impressions, but you've clearly been with these characters for quite some time. So what was your main goal with submitting it to ears, and what do you hope to do with the play going forward?
Well, it's funny, actually. I was working... So my one job at the Wilma is I go around Philadelphia and distribute... like posters, flyers, that kind of thing. I was actually in a grocery store in West Philly. I am trying to think of the name of it. I cannot remember. It's on Baltimore Ave. But I saw your little postcard.
Oh, wow.
It's like, playwrights?
Yeah.
Or got a play on it? And I'm like, as a matter of fact, I do. And I was reading that and I was like, okay, this could be interesting.
Just get a new look on it.
I just want all the perspectives I can possibly get on it. And while this production that we got to do, I'm so thankful we got to do it. It was very much, you know, it's still in the beginning stages. And I want to see it grow into something more, even though what it started off with. I'm kind of hoping that performance was just the springboard of what I can do with it. I really... I'm looking forward to hearing the reading done by other actors that...
I hope I do Eric justice.
I'm sure you will. Even just in our short time talking, I 100% know that you're gonna...
Oh, thank you.
You know Phantom well enough, so, like, you're fine. Like,
All right.
you got the main part of it down. But yeah, like, I want to see this play hopefully go on to bigger and better things, and getting to work with Elephant Ears and just having them be like, oh, like, yeah, we'll promote you. We'll promote your show. Like, it was just like, oh, wow, here's a group of people that wants to support new theater and new works and up-and-coming playwrights. And, like, it was just such a positive experience for me. I'm like, wow, this is, like, why can't everything be like this?
Well, that's definitely our goal, is to make sure that playwrights, especially new playwrights, feel that they have that space, that safety to kind of springboard ideas and springboard what they're working on, and, you know, get, you know, constructive yet helpful feedback. And I certainly, as someone who grew up in a Catholic school environment, and has since moved kind of away from that, not totally away, because I know my mother is still listening to this episode. I got a phone call from her tomorrow. but no, it was interesting, and I definitely am looking forward to hopefully hearing from you again after the feedback. But if I could just speak on it, and this is just 1,000% my opinion. You do not have to take any of this, but I thought it was interesting that you said earlier that you were going for not just playwriting, but screenwriting. Because when I read this piece, one of the main things I could think about was that I could see the story as a screenplay, as a film versus a play. Not that it would be wrong as a play, but I thought particularly it'd be neat to play with the cat element and to play with some of the locations in a film medium.
That's so funny that you say that, because I'm actually doing that as like right now.
Oh, wow.
I'm actually taking like a screenwriting class at University of the Arts to kind of just try my hand at it, to kind of get some experience. And I came to them and I'm like, okay, so I just did this show and I want to do it as a screenplay. It's actually really funny. So I had a bunch of people read it. They were like, I don't know. But
can you
I
do this on stage?
They were like, this 100% would work on stage, but convince
could it
us.
Be?
They
could
were like, convince us that it could work as a screenplay. And I'm like, okay, well, now that just makes me want to do it even more. So
I really like that you won't take no for an answer. I think that is a sign that I think this piece will grow into something that you need it to become.
Thank you. I could also just be needlessly stubborn, but I have about 10 pages or so written, and I brought it in and they were like, okay, like, keep working with this, like, we'll see. So it's been a process. It would look very different in terms of like how it would flow chronologically, and like different,
right,
how I would tell the story would probably function a bit differently, but I think
maybe not as linear.
Not as linear. I think I would play more with like flashbacks and that sort of thing. Like, I actually moved, I would open up the scene with the just background information on the show. So the boy who's going off to seminary finds himself kind of compromised when he falls in love with another friend girl in the friend group.
Yeah.
And I started off the screenplay draft that I'm writing so far with the very first scene being them kind of establishing their chemistry, like, in the chapel.
Okay.
And then being told backwards from there, sort of.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely be interested in reading that.
Thanks. I'll be sure to send it your way.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for sharing this with us. Before we wrap up, just to wind down, this is definitely a lighter piece than some other submissions we've gotten, so there's not really a call to emotionally wind down, because we've definitely had episodes in the past where the subject matter has caused me to have to be like, and now fun question at the end. But I always end the episode with a fun question. And this one, not so much funny, but just it's a nice little thinker. If you could pick a character, I guess specifically from this piece, to interact with specifically, who would it be and why?
Ooh. Okay. I'm gonna have to go with Claire, who is after Eric and Catherine, who are dating, break up, and he moves on.
Claire was one of my favorite characters, by the way.
everybody loved Claire. She was a crowd favorite easily. I would 100% pick her because she was actually not in the original script. Oh, wow. She was only referred to.
Yeah.
And one of my actresses who came in, like, I was like, I really want...
I want Claire
to be real, and I want Claire to be her, and I want to have her find this person. And so she's the newest one to the group, I guess. And so... And she just, like, gets... Like, she... Poor Claire. Like, all the characters are just so... mean to her, I guess, except for Erica. Like, I just would love to get her perspective on the what's what of the script and what's going on with all these people. I would love to get to know Claire personally. I would want her to be... I would want to be friends with her in real life.
Nice. Well, Liz, thank you again so, so much for coming on out. That's all we have for this month. Remember, any playwrights out there, if you have a play that you want heard, please, please, please send it to erpsubmissions@gmail.com. Remember, as always, every story deserves to be heard, so join our elephant herd today. I'm Robert Gene Pelleccio, signing off. Until the next time, bye. Thank you.